As I'm sure you all should know by now, this episode has two parts. This is the second part in the two-part episode. In the last episode, we discussed dark matter. We discussed the history of both dark matter and dark energy. We discussed specifically dark matter, and in this episode, we're going to discuss dark energy and basically its intrinsic properties. This is essentially entirely an episode on dark energy. Literally, it is entirely an episode on dark energy. It basically can stand by itself, but not quite. Anyways, let's get into it. Dark energy is another dark classification of objects that change the platform of cosmology forever. Dark energy is an unknown form of energy that, as should be known, affects cosmological expansion and its historical and future rates. Dark energy differs from dark matter in that it is far more abundant. 68% of the matter energy in the universe is dark energy, whereas 27% is dark matter, and these are estimates based upon the Lambda CDM model. The rest of the 5%, because obviously 68 plus 27 equals 95. Obviously, the last 5% is baryonic matter. 68.1 and 27, basically. It adds up to around 95.1%, and the rest of the 4.9% is baryonic matter. That is what we know so far. It is based on the cosmic microwave background's actual studies, I guess, observations of the critical mass of the universe, of the energy mass, energy density of the universe. And we have found that these are the numbers. So basically, we discover that it is far more abundant and that dark energy shows itself in only in the universal sphere scale. Like, dark energy differs from dark matter. I mean, basically, yeah, it differs from dark matter in that it is more abundant, but also in that dark energy shows itself on the universal sphere. Only in the universal scale, whereas dark matter does not show itself in the universal scale necessarily. This essentially means that dark energy does not show its grandeur upon a galactic scale, but rather upon the scale of the universe itself. And in that, dark energy pushes matter outward rather than pulling it inward, as does dark matter through gravitational interactions. When we discussed the scale factor of dark matter, it was found that this matter is the inverse cube of the scale factor. To picture the scale factor of an object, like to understand this scale factor, cube, inverse cube, imagine a hypothetical universe in which the matter density was 1/8. I'm not going to add units because this universe is a non-technical and hypothetical universe. If this universe were to double in size, the density would decrease by a factor of 8. Because this is 1/8. It starts as 1/8 and it would decrease by a factor of 8. So it would be dividing 1/8 by 8, basically. Because remember that this is the inverse cube. So this is going to be 1 times 8 to the third power. So technically this is not technically going to be 1 to the 64th, but it's actually going to be much lower density. Basically, it's the inverse cube of the scale factor. So if you increase the size of the universe by 2, you're actually going to be decreasing the density by a factor of 8, because this is the inverse cube of the scale factor, meaning that basically, so just imagine 2 cubed. What does 2 cubed equal? 8. 8. And you have 1/8. Let's just say the density is 1/8. 1/8 divided by 8 is 1/64th. I knew that, but I had to give dramatic effect. But that is basically what happens with dark matter. But unlike dark matter, dark energy is an intrinsic property of space, at least based upon the cosmological constant theory of dark energy, but not necessarily with quintessence. But even so, it is believed to be an intrinsic property of space that varies not based upon the volume of the universe, and meaning that dark energy has a scale factor of A to the 0th power, or 1. Basically, this means that no matter what the density, no matter what increase in volume that occurs, because dark energy is an intrinsic value property of space, it means that it'll essentially prolong. 1, it stays to 1, stays 1. There's no coefficient, it's not a coefficient, it is a constant. It stays at 1. Just imagine it's 1. That's basically what it is. The density stays the same. It has a constant energy density throughout the universe and should be isotropic. Some studies have postulated that there could be incredibly slight anisotropies in the dark energy density of the universe, as there are in the cosmic microwave background, but as of now, no studies have proven significant inhomogeneities or even anisotropies in dark energy density. Now, again, it depends. Quintessence, there's a possibility that quintessence could pose that inhomogeneity, but I'm not sure, to be honest. It may not. It may. Dark energy, like dark matter, has not been directly observed, as in the particles of the energy itself have been studied, but rather that their effects on space-time have been observed. Indirect observations of dark energy have proven its existence unequivocally, but just like dark matter, we do not understand what is responsible for dark energy. Dark matter is observed indirectly through its gravitational effects on various massive objects, specifically galaxy clusters. Galaxy rotation curves throughout the universe do not represent what should be observed, for the rotational velocities of the outer spirals and outer galaxies are far greater than is represented by standard gravitational laws. Dark energy is indirectly observed through different processes, for it aids processes that exist throughout the universe as a whole, rather than galaxies and galactic clusters. The first published observational evidence for dark energy occurred in 1998, when the Hi-Z supernova search team published results on their observations of supernovae. Through this, it was first discovered that the expansion rate of the universe was actually accelerating, and it still is accelerating, of course. Cosmic acceleration showcased the intrinsic nature of dark energy, which accentuates all cosmological expansion and decelerates all cosmological contraction. Remember, it's a repulsive force. These observations were corroborated by numerous subsequent experiments, all of which ran in line with the Lambda CDM model, the current front runner in a theory of matter and energy in the universe. Another indirect body of evidence supporting dark energy occurs through measurements of the anisotropies of the cosmic microwave background. These anisotropies indicate that the universe is close to, but not quite, flat. For the universe to be flat, its mass-energy density must be equal to that of the critical density. However, matter accounts for only 30% of the critical density, and considering that the universe is near flat, it is also near critical density, meaning that there must be an underlying energy that is an intrinsic mechanism of the universe. Observations attempting to measure the mass-energy density of the universe have indicated that the amount of energy in the universe accounts for around 70% of the total mass-energy in the universe. Whereas all matter, whether baryonic or cold, dark, accounts for the remaining 30%. The most accurate measurement to date, based on observations of the cosmic microwave background, which we discussed earlier, by the Planck spacecraft, indicated a universe of 68.3% dark energy, 26.8% dark matter, that obviously adds up to 95.1%, and 4.9% normal baryonic matter, or visible matter. There are two proposed forms of dark energy, one of which originates from the mathematical fine-tuning Albert Einstein considered his biggest blunder. Now, of course it's his biggest blunder, because even his biggest blunder ended up being a very, very important thing in new sciences. He didn't live to realize it, though. He didn't live to get to reap the benefits of it. It's the same with general relativity. He never won a Nobel Prize for it, but it was so the grandeur of general relativity was so incredible. It was such an incredible scientific doctrine. But again, observational evidence. Not easy to find when you're proposing a theory of gravity. Anytime. Anything dealing with gravity, good luck trying to observe it. You're not going to find it. Gravity is the most annoying thing in the universe, by far. So the first proposed form of dark energy is the cosmological constant. It's also known as the vacuum energy, for it is the energy density of the vacuum of space. Dark energy, by its simplest definition, is the intrinsic fundamental energy of space. In general relativity, this intrinsic energy of the universe is represented by the cosmological constant. It's seen in the equations as the Greek letter lambda. It is a fine-tuning constant created by Albert Einstein to create a static universe under general relativity that became seemingly pointless once the universe was discovered to be expanding. After this discovery, the cosmological constant was believed to be equal to zero until the late 1990s, when cosmologists it's not easy to speak those correctly, to pronounce them correctly. When cosmologists, through data accumulated pertaining to supernovae, discovered that the expansion of the universe was indeed accelerating. The cosmological constant, as it is energy, is believed to have a gravitational effect as a result of the mass-energy equivalence, or E equals MC squared, of course, except this gravitational effect exerts a pressure opposite to that of gravity. Dark energy, like the cosmological constant, produces a negative, repulsive pressure that ceases the gravitational contraction that would occur without the existence of dark energy. The cosmological constant, if proven to be the essence of dark energy, explains the acceleration of the expansion of the universe, for the cosmological constant has a negative pressure that is equal and opposite to its energy density. So it's basically 10 joules per meter cubed versus negative 10 joules per meter cubed. The cosmological constant is the leading theory for the property behind dark energy for two reasons. The first reason is that it's simple. The cosmological constant is simple in the way that it does not require any basic, fundamental changes to Einstein's field equations. Remember that Einstein introduced this as a fine-tuning mechanism to produce a static universe under the field equations. So there naturally would not be any issues with the field equations when considering the cosmological constant. The second reason is that there is already a natural explanation for its origins. Many quantum field theories, theories that combine classical field theories with special relativity and quantum mechanics, predict vacuum fluctuations, which theoretically would give the vacuum a cosmological constant-like energy. But even though the cosmological constant is the leading dark energy candidate, it comes not without its flaws. First, those same quantum field theories that predict vacuum energy, or the cosmological constant, through vacuum fluctuations, also predict a cosmological constant that is greater than 100 magnitudes too large for the current constant. This problem is known as the... Really, this is just an absolutely amazing, very, very creative name. The cosmological constant problem. See? Very creative. Which details that through observations of the vacuum energy density and the theoretical value of zero point energy, which is the lowest possible energy a quantum mechanical system can have, predicted in quantum field theory and depending on various factors such as the Planck energy cutoff, the discrepancy at this point between observed and the theorized can be greater than 120 magnitudes. So the cosmological constant that we know, that we believe to exist, is 120 magnitudes too low for the zero point energy of the universe in a quantum mechanical field theory, Think about that. It is widely accepted as the greatest discrepancy between observation and theory in all of science, and is often regarded by physicists as, and I quote, the worst theoretical prediction in all of physics. Now, yeah. 100 magnitudes, that is a big difference. We talked about the hierarchy problem not too long ago, and that was a 34 magnitude difference. This is 100. Google, that is a big difference. That is an absolutely massive difference. 120 magnitudes. Think about that. In a way, the problem is a testament to how little our species knows. A solution to this problem, though, may be through another canceling term that cancels almost all, but not all, of the cosmological constant. But no canceling term has been discovered. And again, that's basically fine-tuning, and, well, it didn't work for Einstein last time. Kind of it did, but still. There are many other solutions, varying from the anthropic principle to the modification of gravity so that it diverges from general relativity itself, but these have not really... grown, let's just say it that way. The cosmological constant also breaks some supersymmetric theories that require a cosmological constant of exactly zero, and there's no indication that there would exist a positive cosmological constant in string theory, for it is unknown whether there is or is not a vacuum state in theory, in string theory. The less popular guess, I guess, the one not holding the scientific consensus and more hypothetical form of dark energy is quintessence. So quintessential, like the archetype, like the most normal something can be, or like the flagship look of some existence. I like to think of it like the most, but this has nothing to do with it, basically. This is completely different. This is dark energy. But anyways, quintessence is a scalar field. is a field that associates a scalar value for every point in space that can change over time, unlike the cosmological constant. Now, that is big. It can change over time. It is not an intrinsic property of space, is what they're saying, is what is being said. It is not an intrinsic property of space. It just exists. It is a part of space, but not an intrinsic property of it. Proponents and researchers of quintessence believe that it was once an attractive force, but it later evolved, quote-unquote, into a repulsive force, just like dark energy around 10 billion years ago, or around 3.7 billion years after the Big Bang. For quintessence to remain dark energy-like, it must not be able to clump into structures, thus it must be light. As a result of the different properties of quintessence relative to the cosmological constant, quintessence predicts a universe with a slightly lower rate of cosmic acceleration than does the cosmological constant. Quintessence, though not been ruled out, has no evidence proving its existence, but it has only some evidence proving against its existence. Oh no, it has not yet been ruled out. Physicists believe that the evidence proving quintessence would result from violations of Einstein's equivalence principle, a law stating the equivalence of gravitational and inertial mass, and thus the variation of fundamental constants in spacetime. The cosmological constant problem is defined as the significant difference between the observed vacuum density of the universe versus the zero-point energy densities predicted by most quantum theories. A similar but different problem occurs with quintessence. Renormalization, a procedure in quantum field theory that replaces theoretically infinite values with observed values, predicts that the scalar fields would acquire large masses, which would be insufficient for the amount of dark energy in the universe. Same thing happened. Not quite the same thing, but close. Very similar thing. They have a large and unusually and just not too big. It's too big. Definitely. Now, quintessence models often detail a quintessence that exists as a tracker, which occurs through the quintessence field's density that closely follows the radiation density of the universe, until basically a certain point known as matter radiation equality. This is an instant in the universe where matter and radiation abundance were equivalent. This point divided two epochs in the universe. There's the radiation dominant epoch and the matter dominant epoch. Matter radiation equality causes quintessence to begin to behave as dark energy, thus potentially contributing to the cosmic acceleration and dark energy abundance that we see today. Now, of course, we are in the matter dominant, or we're not in the epoch anymore. Like, there would be more quintessence than there would be matter. There'd be more energy than there would be matter, essentially. That's essentially what's happening right now. But basically, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Because cosmic acceleration is obviously a thing, it's obviously occurring, and it has to be because of repulsive force. And if it's quintessence, if it is indeed quintessence, then we're technically going to be in the radiation dominant era, basically. In 1912, the astronomer Vesto Slipher discovered that light from distant galaxies became progressively more redshifted, indicating that the galaxies were traveling away from Earth. As a result, physicists began to postulate an expanding universe that defied previous belief in a static universe. In 1922, Alexander Friedman, the creator of the Friedman equations, used Einstein's field equations to prove an expanding universe. In 1927, the astronomer Georges Lemaître presented the first observational evidence for the relationship between the distances and recessional velocities of the galaxies, and in 1929, Edwin Hubble confirmed that observation. When extrapolating with general relativity to the beginning of the universe, there existed the Big Bang, which was a vast expansion of space-time from the singularity, the theorized dimensionless point of infinite heat and density, occurring around 13.8 billion years ago. Around 10 to the negative 36 seconds after the Big Bang, really long time, the period known as the inflationary epoch began. I heard from someone recently that the universe essentially expanded by a matter of 10 to the 81st power. In the 1980s, Alan Guth, sought to explain the non-existence of monopoles, which are hypothetical particles that have only one magnetic pole. Typical magnets, of course, have a north and south pole dipoles. And even if you cut a magnet in half, you're not going to cut off the south pole and just get rid of them. That's not how it works. That's definitely not even close to how it works. There's just another magnet. You just create two magnets. You have a second magnet. So now you can stick them together and also force them apart. With the 1980s understanding of the universe, magnetic monopoles should exist, but they were undetectable throughout the universe. To combat what was known as the monopole problem, Alan Guth proposed a theory of cosmic inflation, which posited an inflationary epoch occurring from 10 to the negative 36 seconds to 10 to the negative 33rd or negative 32nd seconds after the Big Bang. The inflationary period was defined by a short but exponential period of cosmological expansion, which helped define the large-scale structure of the universe that exists today. Inflation, however, did not exist forever. It is believed that the periods following this inflationary epoch held a universe that expanded, but at a much slower rate, especially than it did now. This, however, did not last forever, for the universe likely began to experience cosmic acceleration around 5 to 5.4 billion years ago. This is based upon two different measures on the same Wikipedia page, but yeah. This period began when dark energy, a topic that has been covered in depth throughout this chapter, began to dominate the universe as the predominant matter or energy in the universe. Remember that dark energy, as it is likely an intrinsic property of space-time, increases in abundance, not in relative, but in absolute abundance, as the universe increases in size. So it doesn't increase in density, but it does increase in total amount. Dark energy exerts a negative pressure that, if in enough abundance, exerts more pressure than gravitational pressure, thus resulting in an expansion of space-time, and eventually an acceleration of that expansion. If dark energy is an intrinsic property of space and exerts more negative pressure than gravity exerts positive pressure, that's quotations, then cosmological expansion will accelerate, which we know it does. We know it does. To understand this process, I like to imagine an analogy in which there exists a star with a great radiation pressure and a limited gravitational pressure. Still has a lot of gravitational pressure, but very great radiation pressure. This generally occurs through hierarchical nucleosynthesis. That's what I like to call it. It's my phrase for a core's transition from lighter element fusion to heavier element fusion. In the core, when, for example, an intermediate mass star transitions from hydrogen fusion to helium fusion, the radiation pressure emanating from this core increases significantly, thus causing the average size star to move to the giant branch of the HR diagram, meaning that its radius increases exponentially. This continues to occur as enough radiation pressure is exerted in the star. Now imagine a star that transitions from hydrogen to helium fusion and experiences the same increases in radiation pressure. But now imagine that the radiation pressure exerted by the star is an intrinsic property of the space it occupies, meaning that as the star gets larger and larger as a result of the radiation pressure overpowering the gravitational pressure, the amount of radiation pressure will increase, thus causing the expansion rate of the star to increase and the expansion itself to increase, thus creating somewhat of a positive feedback loop that continues to increase the size and the acceleration of that size of the star. While the physics of this hypothetical star are very obviously inconsistent with basic star properties, it still indicates how dark energy accelerates our cosmological expansion. In the case of a cosmological constant form of dark energy, if the volume of the universe were to double, the density of dark matter would halve, considering it is not an innate property of space, whereas the density of dark energy would remain constant. In the gravitational pressure versus radiational pressure death grip, the radiation pressure wins as the universe expands more. In theories of cosmological expansion that follow the intrinsic properties of the cosmological constant, the universe will continue to expand and accelerate, exponentially even so, eventually to the point at which any objects not gravitationally confined to one another will accelerate from one another greater than the speed of light, thus disconnecting any gravitationally disconnected objects in the universe. This technically already occurs, for there exist many objects in the universe, generally not within our particle horizon, link in bibliography, that have recessional velocities far greater than that of the speed of light. For example, let's imagine the universe in a fixed Hubble constant of 70 kilometers per second per megaparsec. The current values generally lay around 73, but this figure is highly disputed, 73 kilometers per second per megaparsec. But anyways, 5 gigaparsecs away from Earth, around 16.3 billion light years, I had to do that in my head, in this in this simulation, imagine the simulation 5 gigaparsecs away from Earth, this object that's 5 gigaparsecs away from Earth holds a recessional velocity of 350,000 kilometers per second. Knowing that the speed of light is 299,792.458 kilometers per second, the recessional velocity of the object is far greater than the speed of light. And thus, any light that the object 5 gigaparsecs away emits, or any light that we emit toward the object 5 gigaparsecs away, will never reach its target as a result of the expansion. In the current universe, any object that exists within around 16 billion light years of Earth can presently emit light that would eventually reach Earth. But anything beyond the cosmological event horizon will be unable to emit light that will ever reach Earth, unless there's some big crunch. But that is unlikely to occur. Now, I'm sure this, I see it, I hear it all the time. People are like, how does the universe expand faster than the speed of light? The universe itself is not confined to special relativity, to the fact, to the mass energy equivalence, the fact that energy is infinite when you get too close to the speed of light, the fact that basically you get an error message because it's an asymptote. It's an asymptote, basically, when it comes down to it. But when you get to that point, when you have the universe does not have to deal specifically with relativity, with the field equations, with Einstein's field equations. It doesn't, because it is the universe itself. General relativity, relativity itself, the theory of relativity deals specifically within a system, within a physical system, a system in physics. But the system itself is not confined to those properties. What is in, what is occurring in the system, the intrinsic properties of the system, yes, but not the system itself. That's essentially, that's what I would assume it is. And it also, it just doesn't, it doesn't have to, it's not inside of space-time. It is not under space-time. It is space-time itself. That's basically what it is. But anyways, cosmological constant, cosmological expansion and cosmic acceleration indicates a universe that will one day reach heat death. Heat death is the point at which maximum entropy in the universe is achieved, and meaning that it reaches thermodynamic equilibrium. When heat death is reached in a very, very, very long time from now, the universe will merely continue to expand and will no longer be able to do work, thus establishing the system as dead. As is apparent by the length in this chat, in this episode, because it's a double episode, it's two episodes, it's not going to quite, I don't know if it's going to quite reach an hour, but it'll be there. It'll be very close, which is significantly inconsistent with prior and likely future episodes. Dark matter and dark energy are significant topics that have drastic effects upon the universe. Dark matter and dark energy are intrinsic elements in our universe that which dominate 95.1% of the matter energy density in the universe, and their effects are integral to the future and even to the past of our universe, which is believed to be a heat death. The future of our universe is believed to be a heat death, the eventual thermodynamic equilibrium state of the closed system that is the universe. But anyway, thank you all for listening, and as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. As is always spoken at the end of the episode of an episode, if you wish to support the podcast, please click the link in the description of my podcast and support with as much money as you wish. Again, as I say every single episode, I'm sure it's probably getting annoying to the people that actually listen to me every week. I have 12 years of college ahead of me, and like many other American high school and college students, I wish to be able to pay for it because it is outrageously, egregiously, odiously expensive. It's horrible. It's abhorrent. But anyway, take care and stay curious.